I'd buy that for a dollar.
Skip to the end. Biggest killer in American history. The 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 biggest killer in American history. Welcome to episode 40 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
40.
Was it Naughty 40 you said last week?
Yeah, Naughty 40.
Naughty 40.
I know it's not got the same sort of cachet to it as 50 or even 25, but it's, you know, it's a milestone, yet another one that we've reached.
And another milestone I don't think we all thought we'd reach.
No, absolutely not. It is quite ridiculous to think that there is, you know, if each of our episodes is sort of an hour and a half to 2 hours, and then we've done something like seven specials as well.
There's about 80 hours of us.
Yeah. It's like you could sit and listen to us for 3 days straight without taking a break.
I mean, why you'd ever want to, I don't know. But
if you do that and send us a video of yourself doing it on YouTube or something for 3 days straight,
Live stream it like Shia LaBeouf in the lift. Just 3 days.
You can have a t-shirt.
You're going to skip to the end t-shirt and a pair of Tommy Wiseau pants.
Yeah, let's do it. There will be some person out there as well that we'll do that.
You're going to say some nutter. Yeah. Oh, anyway, so what we got coming up on this episode. Our main review is Grimsby, the new comedy from Sacha Baron Cohen. Dear listener, you couldn't see me using speech marks when I said comedy then, but yeah. We're also going to be rewatching RoboCop to make up for Grimsby.
The remake, yeah.
New, or not one of the shoddy sequels either. The original 1987 RoboCop.
Adam's going home to rewatch this now.
I just need to take a minute.
What year are we going to skip back in time to, Mark?
1990, so I'm really, really excited to say goodbye to that. And then, you know, let's be honest about it. We're getting so...
Me and Ben have been having a chat, and we think we should now start going the other way. So we're actually going to...
Back up.
Yeah, we're going to go back up now. So it's going to be 1991 again next week.
Or should we just skip the 80s and get to the 70s? Because the 80s aren't really that good, are they?
Yeah, 79.
Yeah, it's been
you
it
wait
off.
And see.
Adam, what is our quiz this time?
It's going to be Raging Bullseye.
It is.
We've got a dartboard set up. I'm not sure how this is going to work, but before we started recording, Ben decided to take a few practice shots and put two darts in his sofa and one in his plant pot.
Yeah, so a porcelain plant pot that amazingly didn't smash. So that's going to go well. Look forward to that. Mark, what's our topic?
It is going to be the top three performances from more of the older actors over 60 years old.
So top three performances by pensioners. That's what we're looking for. Before we move on to the actual show, last night was the 88th annual Academy Awards, the Oscars. We'll talk about the Oscars more holistically in a minute, but let's talk first of all about our predictions. So on the last episode, for those who listened, the three of us and our guest at the time, Gemma, we all picked our potential winners in the top eight categories. So the categories that we looked at were the two screenplay categories, the four acting categories, best director and best film. Eight picks. The three of us lads all went for the same eight things. Gemma went for this just extraordinary list of random films, some of which probably weren't even nominated. So the results are in. Of the eight predictions, the three of us got 7 out of 8 correct.
I think that's bloody good going.
Which I think that is decent. We had Big Short and Spotlight to win the screenplay awards. We had Alicia Vikander to win supporting actress, DiCaprio and Larson to win the main acting awards, Iñárritu to win director, Spotlight to win film. The only one we got wrong is that we went for the sentimental option of Stallone to win best supporting actor, but Mark Rylance won it.
And I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
There's no argument
I'm
here.
I'm absolutely fine with that.
Yeah.
Stallone, on merit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Stallone was brilliant. And as I say, it would be more of a sentimental pick, but Rylance was the best thing about Bridge of Spies.
I loved his speech as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just he's talking about how he sees himself as a speech head now.
Yeah.
It's not just about him being, he wasn't the best in his own mind.
He even listed some of the other people who weren't nominated but could have been. And he says, you know, I'm just here basically, I'm the one who gets to talk on behalf of these great actors rather than being the winner.
It was fantastically humbling.
Yeah, he was superb. So Gemma, just to give you her score, Gemma got one. One out of eight, right? Well done, Gemma. She had Alicia Vikander for Best Supporting Actress. Everything else was wrong. But it was a noble effort.
Nice try.
So what did we think about the show overall? What did we think to Chris Rock as the presenter?
It was a great show. I thought Chris Rock was hilarious.
Yep.
He dealt with all the major points. Because obviously it's very stop-start as the host, you get sort of 10 minutes and then you go off and yeah. two awards are given and you come back on for 10 minutes. You've got to do other things as well. But he managed to portray his own brand of comedy across there as well.
Yeah.
Which is always the most difficult thing. I mean, comparing him to Neil Patrick Harris from last year, so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Neil Patrick Harris is a great showman, but he's not a comedian. You need someone who has comedic chops. He's a good comedic actor, but he's not a comedian. Chris Rock is perfect for this kind of gig, and I think the way he addressed the whole sort of Oscar so white controversy was great. It was serious, and he didn't pull any punches, but there was also a kind of lighthearted element yeah. to it. It was inclusive, and I think he had everyone in the crowd on his side. I thought he dealt with it really, really well.
I was loving the music performances. Dave Grohl doing the Beatles cover, which fantastic. I thought was really, really well
for
done.
The In Memoriam
yeah,
segment.
With all yeah. the symphony orchestra and stuff. I thought that sounded brilliant. I hated Sam Smith.
Yeah,
I hate that
awful
sort
song.
Of falsetto thing he does. It's annoying and yeah. it's not a good song. But I actually have
the
to
Academy
say
The Academy disagree.
Yeah. yeah, but I have to say it. Lady Gaga sounded amazing. Incredible. Absolutely unbelievable.
She is killing it at the minute. She's not my cup of tea. I listen to heavy metal, for Christ's sake. But this so far this year, she did a tribute to David Bowie at the Grammys, which was amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
She did the national anthem at the Super Bowl, and she was amazing. And then she killed it again on the Oscars. She's a big game player, is Lady Gaga.
Yeah, and you could actually feel the emotion in the song
yeah.
as well. And when she brought all the people out as well
yeah.
with all the stuff written down their arms. It's a great show. I mean,
that was a little bit powerful. Too Coldplay for me. I was expecting to see like Greenpeace or something on one of their arms.
Very
but...
powerful, very moving, considering what the song's...
Yeah, there were people who'd been sexually abused, Mark.
I know. No, I'm not taking anything away from it, but I didn't need all that. I was happy with her on the piano.
Are you saying that Chris Martin looks like someone who's been sexually abused?
Speaking of the In Memoriam segment, Adam, there was something you mentioned to me just before we started recording about a glaring omission.
Yes, I was very... Everyone's talking about Abe Vigoda
yeah.
as a glaring omission. Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ridiculous.
How yeah. can you miss Roddy Piper?
Because it's not as if he just did sort of crappy WWE films. He's been in John Carpenter movies, for yes. Christ's sake. He should have been in that In Memoriam segment. Have.
And Hell Comes to Frogtown.
yeah.
For that
he
alone.
Doesn't just do crappy B-movies.
I'm pretty sure he won an Oscar for that.
He was at least nominated, I believe.
But yeah, that wasn't right, really. But it was quite moving again to see David Bowie and they yeah. actually had him speak. Mm-hmm.
It was nice to see Leonard Nimoy as the figurehead.
Yeah, yeah. It was really
the,
nice.
The In Memoriam as well. It was great to see him. Because I thought it was going to be Bowie. But to see Leonard Nimoy there, and he kind of reminds you as well. You're like, oh, God, yeah, he died.
Yeah,
you?
Exactly, yeah. One of the things I like now is with the In Memoriam segment, in recent years, they will always have a musician singing over it. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they've done that is to prevent the audience clapping, because it used to just play out in silence or just with like some yeah. instrumental music. Yeah. And then what it used to be was a competition for everyone's favourite dead person. So some yeah. people wouldn't get as big an applause and then someone else would get more. And it's kind of, that's not what you want. You don't want to rate dead people.
No.
So that's why they have someone singing over it now, to prevent the crowd from doing that, which
and
works
then everyone
a lot
just
better.
Clap at the end.
Yeah
exactly. In terms of other presenters, I thought Louis C.K. was great.
As always.
Yeah, I thought he was hilarious.
And Tina Fey and Steve Carell were great.
Tina Fey and Carell were great, but Louis C.K., I was watching him thinking, he's got to present it next
yeah.
year. He would be
yeah.
ideal.
Give him the whole thing.
I think I could see it happening as well.
Yeah, yeah. It'd just be down to whether he'd want to do it or not.
Yeah.
Because you're on a bit of a hide into nothing, really. Most people come out of it looking bad. Chris Rock's come out of it looking great, but he's the minority. You don't yeah. tend to do that. I thought Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe were hilarious. They had a good
great.
Bit of banter. I'm looking forward to their film that they've done together that's coming out soon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, but it's called The Nice Guys or something like that, but it's, I think, written and directed by Shane Black, so that should be really good. But I just thought it was a really good show.
It was really fun. Really entertaining and serious when it needed to be.
Yeah,
it's exactly what you want from the Academy Awards.
Absolutely right. And the problem with the Oscars, because they're 4 hours long, sometimes they can really drag and it feels, you can feel every single minute of that 4 hours. But I didn't. It flew by for me.
And Kevin Hart was hilarious as
well. Yeah, he was great, yeah. The worst part of it was, because we're watching it in England, so we have to watch it on Sky Movies, the worst part was having to sit through Alex Zane's inane commentary on things. Yeah. Could have lived without that.
There was one point where he literally made a comment, someone said, oh, sorry, I was reading Twitter. Have I come in at the right point?
Yeah, he just launched in with a response to something, which yeah. I don't think that's exactly what they were talking about.
There was a pre-show on Sky last night with some other people. I think there was Zoe Ball and some other guys I'd not really heard of. And there was this old actress woman that just didn't seem that she wanted to be there. I can't remember her name.
Elizabeth McGovern, I think
that
her name
was. That
was
it, right.
I think she's old, but...
Oldish, next to Zane. And she was annoying me a little bit because she didn't really seem like she cared. And what she kept doing, which really annoyed me, is she kept referring to Room as the Room. And what she did, and it really got to me, she goes, at the end of the day, my heart this year is on the Room. It's full of emotion. It's full of, you know, heart. It's the backbone of all the Oscars. It should be the recognised. And I was sitting there going, I agree. I agree. And then Zayn turned around and said, yes, in Room, to kind of correct her. And then she did, from then on, say Room. But I thought she was a big fan of Wiser. I thought, this is it. She's got some pants on under there.
Well, maybe she was. Maybe she was sitting there. Maybe she had gone and watched The Room,
yeah,
thinking it was Room. When she was looking at Brie Larson picking up this award, she was like, she looks a lot different to the woman that was having her navel
Lisa's
humped.
Lost a lot of weight, yeah. Where's Denny?
Moving on.
But Leo got his award. We're happy. Yeah, it's finally done. And Brie Larson fully deserved. And it was just great seeing her... genuinely, I think, surprised that she won. Yeah,
do you know what was my favourite bit? Anything to do with Jacob Tremblay was amazing. Like the bit where when Brie won and she turned around and like got a high five.
Yeah.
The bit when the Star Wars droids came on and you see him jump out of his seat. Yeah. That was genius.
I loved it. Literally, if you had to listen really close because he was so far away from the mic.
Yeah.
But when Chris Rock had introduced him and walked off, he just went, I loved you in Madagascar.
I think possibly my favourite thing overall in the show was when Spotlight won the big award and the camera showed Michael Keaton walking towards the stage and he was sort of pumping his fist in the air and you could see quite clearly that he'd gone, fuck yeah!
Well, it seems like we all had a great time watching
it.
Yeah,
and,
fantastic. 7 out of 8. We're all winners. That means I'm a winner 2 years running.
All right.
Technically.
Bragging.
And let's bring it on next year.
I was going to say, cause we said we were going to go with whoever we wanted to win as well, the second backup, but I think we all wanted Stallone to win anyway, didn't we?
I think we probably did, actually, yeah.
We'll just let Gemma have that award, because she obviously picked the people that she wanted.
So she got, we'll say 2 out of 8.
Yeah, she can have that.
And so before we move on to the show, this isn't the last awards-type talk we're going to have today. The Skippies are coming up a little later on as well, so I look forward to that. So, let's get started.
So to start this episode, the topic. Now, with the topic of this choice, I've got a couple of rules that I wanted to really firmly stamp down there. The first one, they had to be over 60 at the time of the actual film going
out. Well, no, hold on. 60 or above, I would say.
Okay,
because I've got one who is 60.
Yeah, 60 or above.
Yeah.
And my second very strict rule is you're not allowed the cast of Cocoon.
Okay.
Okay. As all three. In one
so on that first rule, they have to be 60 at the time.
Or over.
Is that 60 or over at the time of filming?
Yes.
Because that's the big question.
Yeah, because I can see people saying, well, if you think about it, 20 years ago.
I paid a bit of attention to the social media. A lot of people said Jeff Bridges, crazy heart. It was actually 59
at the time
of filming.
See, what I did is I looked at the year the film came out and I took a year off it. Generally speaking, a film comes out a year after they started production. And then if 1 year earlier than the film came out, they were 60, I counted them as being 60 or above.
Sounds like we're all going to be all right then. I'm going to throw it straight to you, Adam. Give me your first one.
Michael Caine.
In
The Dark Knight Rises.
Of course.
there was another film I'd love to have put him in for, but it had to go for this one because The Dark Knight Rises is a good film.
Is it?
It's not a great film. It's a good film, but it is anchored by his performance as Alfred.
Yeah.
All the emotion in the entire film comes from him.
Yeah.
Like you don't get Tom Hardy's already struggling acting behind a mask, which most people struggle with anyway. Mm. Christian Bale does a standard Bruce Wayne job. You don't really feel a lot of sympathy for him. It's only Alfred on screen and who really kind of drives that point home of how he has raised this child to the man he is. He's supported him, he's cared for him throughout this entire time. And now he's watching him essentially try and go to his death.
Yeah.
And literally put himself in the ground. And the whole performance is summed up by a couple of impassioned speeches he really makes. The first one to him, where he talks about how he's going to leave because it's the only way he might be able to get through to him that I can no longer do this. I can no longer sit by and watch you do this. And the second in front of the grave where after he thinks...
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne's died and he's actually in front of the graves of Thomas and Martha Wayne and he breaks down in tears saying how he's failed them.
That was the first scene I thought of when you said his name for this film that lives in the memory. That
and
bit.
my God, it's one of the most emotional things I've seen. Because, I mean, hell, if you see an old man crying on screen anyway, it starts bringing a tear to your eye. Let alone when it's about Batman. For me, it's always going to be, it's Alfred, man.
He is great in that film.
So I had to put him in for that.
I like the scene as well where he's sort of at the cafe. Where are they? Like in Italy or something?
Oh, yeah, in Florence, isn't it?
Yeah, because he's talked about, you know, I'd like to be there and turn around and see you. Yeah. And then he does. That's great.
See, I don't like that film a lot, and I find a lot of faults with it. But when you were talking then, I can't fault Alfred at all in that movie. Yeah.
He's the emotional linchpin in there, yeah. He's the emotional linchpin of the entire film. He's the only thing that offers any sort of emotion. The film tries to get you to care about Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle, but you can't.
Yeah.
Because it's not built quickly enough. The relationship between Alfred and Bruce has been built over two other films.
Yeah.
And that's why Michael Caine just carries it with so much gravitas.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that choice at all.
Great choice. Ben?
I'm going to go with Jeff Bridges in True Grit.
Oh, nice.
Which I have him, based on my mathematical system, as being 60 when that film was made. And I talked a couple of... It was either the last episode or the one before. I talked about Hayley Steinfeld in True Grit.
Was the last episode?
It was the last episode, yeah. That's right. And how she was the anchor of that film. She was the lead, despite what, you know, the Oscars said. But that doesn't take away from how great Jeff Bridges is. He's a brilliant actor. He's got great range. But I just love him when he's a curmudgeonly old man. That's my favourite type of Jeff Bridges. And not only is he that in this, he's also just a stone-cold badass as well. It's probably my favourite performance of his. I don't know, you know, the dude is way up there as well. But it's just some great work, especially for an old fella.
You're going to get no disagreement from me. He's actually in my list as well. Yay! At number two. Nice. I wanted him for Crazy Heart, and when I couldn't, I thought, well...
Get him in anyway.
It's going to be for True Grit, because yeah. Jeff Bridges is the dude. Mm-hmm. He's an absolute just... He's a phenomenal actor to start with. He's yeah. probably one of my favourites of all time,
yeah,
for sure. And in True Grit, although Hayley Steinfeld, as you said, kind of carries the film, he is a let's say, very, very high supporting member of that film. And
yeah.
like you say, when he's that Rooster Cogburn, the curmudgeonly old drunken bounty hunter, essentially, yeah. it's wonderful. It's a great performance from him as well.
Just one of my favourite lines and deliveries of a line is in that film, where there's a guy who's sort of dying on the floor and he's asking for help, and Rooster says to him, "I can do nothing for you, son." I just love that line.
True Grip was obviously a film that was remade from the John Wayne version, I believe.
Yeah.
So to pull off that role. When someone who's iconic as that has done it previously, it was mighty impressive.
Yeah, it's a hard act to follow.
So no arguments from me.
Excellent.
Mark, you're a big fan of sort of Western stories, aren't you?
I am, which leads nicely to Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven.
There we go.
He actually doesn't know my choices either. I liken this, who portrays Bill Money. I've talked about Unforgiven as being one of my favourite films from 19... Was it in Skip Back in Time a couple of episodes ago?
I think it was, yeah.
And... my dad raised me watching this film, and I absolutely love it. And I think
this
that's
and
one
Men
of...
at Work.
Yes. And Clint Eastwood, for me, this is his best performance on screen. I love the fact that he's gone on to do good directing as well. But for me, in this film, he is the badass. I watch him, and I'm just in awe through the whole time of that film. It's a long film. I think it's nearly 3 hours, but I never, ever get bored of watching him. I've watched it again recently, and I felt exactly the same as when I was a kid watching it. And I just think... that is how you be a badass on screen. And for some reason, you know, I saw some people coming from social media saying, what's the film about racism that he did?
Gran Torino.
Yeah. I think this shit's all over that performance for me. So sorry, social media, you're wrong. you allowed your opinion, but I was like, no, you forgot that he's still over 60 and Unforgiven. So that's my first choice.
Yeah, it's a great choice.
Solid.
Definitely can't argue with that.
Well, we've already had my second with Jeff Bridges. So.
Well, I'm going to go for a 63-year-old this time. It was Samuel L. Jackson in Django Unchained.
I've completely forgot about him.
I think he was the unsung hero of that film. Because people...
As the Uncle Tom kind of figure.
Yeah, exactly. People obviously focused on Jamie Foxx because he was the titular character. They focused on Christoph Waltz because he nailed it. He was brilliant. And they focused on Leonardo DiCaprio because you don't get to see DiCaprio play a bad guy very often. Yeah. And he was chewing the scenery quite magnificently. So people, I think Jackson got lost in the shuffle a little bit. But I think this is on a par with his performance as Jules Winfield in Pulp Fiction. It's one of the best things he's ever done.
It's beautiful to watch.
He's such an arsehole, yeah. But so, so funny.
It's one of the most complex characters to play on screen as well, because you're essentially a man who has sold his own race down the river.
Yeah.
Just for a cushy life of his own.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Jackson portrays that with what can only be described as a touch of realism with a sense of hilarity. And that's the weirdest thing about it. It's, I mean, some of his lines in that film that really you can't say.
Yeah, oh no. Not on a polite podcast.
No.
Yeah.
Well, we're absolutely fantastic. And he was good fun to watch.
The way he reacts to some of the things that Django does and says... The anger that a fellow black person would dare to speak to a white person in that way is, oh God, so, so funny.
I'm sitting here literally going, I can't believe I didn't pick that, because I thought he was mid-50s. I just don't see him as being an over 60-year-old. And that was still quite a few years ago.
Do you know what I had to do to make this list? I had to basically sit and think of who are actors that are quite old, and then look on IMDb and see what they've done since they turned 60. So two of the first people I looked up were Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. They've done nothing good since the 1960s.
Hang on. Jack and Jill as well.
I really can't believe he's over 60 in that film. That's
63.
Blow my mind. I might change all of my choices. I'm just seeing which one.
And the thing is, I think because Samuel L. Jackson is in every film ever made, and he's sort of made a career now of just being the cool guy, just essentially being himself. I like to see it when he plays against type, or when he works a bit harder, because he is a great actor when he puts the graft in and doesn't just take paycheck movies. Yeah. So this was him. This was nothing like he'd done before, and it's superb.
And usually, whenever he gets with Tarantino, who writes him some fantastic dialogue,
unfortunately,
it doesn't necessarily work in a 3-hour stage play.
but even then, he's one of the best things in Hateful Eight.
Yeah, there's not many though.
You want to hear my next choice?
Yeah,
no. It's Cardinal Glick in Dogma, played by George Carlin.
Nice.
He is unfortunately no longer with us. Mm-hmm. He's something about that guy. I've watched some of his stand-up shows on Netflix. I can just look at him and find him funny. Just his face. He's a bit like Louis C.K. I just love him from the moment he smiles. But in Dogma, he hasn't got a massive part, but when he is on screen, pushing the Catholic Church, was it Buddy Christ?
Yeah, Buddy Christ.
I love this guy, and I think this performance is outstanding. And I know, Ben, you're a fan of Dogma.
As far as Kevin Smith films go, I actually really like it. Yeah.
Which doesn't really put it that high.
There's not still a lot of praise there for him. But in this film, I think this guy is hilarious. I love the way he portrays his character. And he's just on-screen presence to me. I'm smiling every time he comes on screen. He then went on and did stuff like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which isn't great. But unfortunately, he's died. But I've gone back and watched a lot of his performances. And
Bill and Ted as well. He was Rufus.
Yeah, I couldn't have him then, though. He was about 50. But yeah, I absolutely love this guy. And I'll always go back and watch as much of his work as I can. So I've given him the credit. And I think in Dogma, he steals the show for the time he's on.
He's one of the greatest stand-up comedians of all time, Carlin. Without Carlin, there would have been no Bill Hicks. There would have been no Louis C.K. These are direct descendants of his kind of work. He's an absolute genius, Carlin. Go back, for those of you who, if you're not familiar with his work, go back and watch his shows on Netflix or wherever you can find them. Yeah. One of the greatest stand-up. He's up there with Richard Pryor as just a legendary stand-up.
He's one of the guys that if you like a comedian now, who's around now, they were influenced by
him.
Big
time, yeah.
So, number one then. It's not necessarily number one in top three order, but I'm not going to overlook your Sly Stallone.
Oh, nice.
Creed.
Yeah.
We've spoke about the performance before when we did the predictions last time, but it is an absolutely heart-wrenching performance as an old Rocky Balboa. I think this all, again, kind of stems from what I said about the Michael Caine performance in The Dark Knight Rises. Mm-hmm. The emotion from this film is built with a back catalogue of six other films.
Yeah.
So you've seen this guy go from undisputed heavy from underdog to undisputed heavyweight champion of the world to comeback king, to man who beat Russia,
to less man who single-handedly ended the Cold War.
Yeah, to less said about the better, back up until comeback, and then on to what we now see is an aging, stuck-in-time heavyweight champion, and Stallone really kind of anchors Creed to that point. I mean, Michael B. Jordan's great in this film.
Oh, superb.
Tony Bellow's great in this film.
Yeah.
But... It's Stallone that adds the emotional gravitas to it again.
And I think a lot of people, when they talk about this film or this performance, act as if it came out of nowhere. But as you rightly say, it's building on what we know from six films. And the last film, Rocky Balboa, was a great film.
Yeah.
And he was superb in that. And I think people liked the film, but they didn't talk enough about his performance. So this is just the next logical step.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal in this film.
And what you said there is a very good point about Rocky Balboa, the relationship he has with his son in that.
Mm.
We obviously get to see them kind of patch things up. But then now we know again further down the line that they haven't necessarily. But he's moved away. He's made a life of his own.
Yeah.
And he's left his dad alone in Philadelphia, who essentially is a man who owns a restaurant and regales his diners with the tales of his past and how he once beat Apollo Creed. And it's really, really heart-wrenching to watch.
It's like a Liverpool fan. just living off past glories.
What I'm liking now is the fact that I know that a lot of people were saying he was a dead cert for the Oscar. I think that's really like we all chose. We thought that was going to be done deal, and that's the surprise of the Oscars. Mm-hmm. He has probably gone home a bit gutted. I'll be honest. I think he's probably thought, 4 years after being Rocky, I'd love to have got that. He'll listen to this podcast next week when
it comes
out.
Big time.
And he'll be like, who cares about the Oscar? Adam chose me. I made it on episode 40.
That's it.
That's it.
And I hope that's what he thinks.
You'll probably retire now.
Well, you know.
How do you top this?
Sly, if you're listening, you want to come on.
Yep.
Drop us a message over Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
Yep.
Mark, how can you get in touch with us?
At SCTE Podcast, or just come round, do whatever, but yeah.
This has just made me think of one of Chris Rock's jokes from the Oscars, one of his best ones, when he was talking about Creed, and he was saying about how the Rocky films have always made him laugh because they were set in a world where white athletes were as good as black athletes, and he said that made it a science fiction film.
And then they showed Stallone, and he was even wetting himself. I was like, that's brilliant. Last one from you then, Ben.
I've been going up in age order, so here's my oldest one. At 68 years old, Jack Nicholson in The Departed.
Yeah.
Not going to pick him.
Frank Costello. again, just scenery chewing of the highest order. Brilliantly done. Sort of loosely based on Whitey Bulger. Just nasty and awful. But because it's Nicholson, just charming as well. He's one of those that it doesn't matter how awful he's playing, just because he has there's just something in his eyes. You can't not be charmed by the man. He is so, so good in this film.
It's very similar to Gary Oldman. Unhinged Jack Nicholson is the best Jack Nicholson.
Absolutely, yeah. Which is one of the reasons why I love the film Anger Management. Now, I know a lot of people don't like this. They just strike it off as a crap Adam Sandler film, and I won't necessarily disagree with you. But Jack Nicholson is so good in that because he is unhinged. Yeah. Not as good as The Departed, though.
I've only watched it once, and I will not watch it again.
I think they're about the same level of performance, but he did get nominated for Anger Management, didn't he?
No, sadly not, no.
That was only by the psychologist.
He probably got nominated for something with Anger Management.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Razzies were about back then.
How old did you say he was in this film?
68.
Wow. Mm. I really do look at people at the wrong age.
I know. That's what the police said.
Adam Johnson. But
allegedly.
Yes. Nearly proven. Yeah, can't argue there, Ben. You love The Departed, and you know that's just another great, great example of that whole performance on everyone in that film is amazing. But
I love everyone in that film. Yeah. I love Jack Nicholson. It's the film that DiCaprio should have won an Oscar for, but wasn't even nominated for it. It was nominated for Blood Diamond that year instead. I even love Ray Winston.
Yeah,
putting on a terrible American accent with the greasiest hair you've ever seen. He is great in that film.
The thing is, he didn't even need to put on an American accent.
No.
They could have just had him as the East London dude again, and it would have fine. It's mob bosses. It's fine, it would work.
Exactly. It'd be like a mob exchange program. They brought one over from the East End
and sent one of theirs over.
Do you want to hear my final choice?
Yeah.
Grandpa Edward Hoover in Little Miss Sunshine, played by Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
I absolutely love this guy. And again, he's not massively in this film, but he's a character that you just need. And I love the lines he comes out with, the advice he's given to his grandson. Fuck a lot of women. That's all he says as his advice about life. But that guy is hilarious, and I've not seen enough of him. I want to see more stuff. I'll have to check out some of his other work.
He's in Argo.
Yeah, which is a much more serious role.
Mm. But, not really. He's actually quite comedic.
He's still
in that
comedic,
one as well,
but in Little Miss Sunshine, I just think he's hilarious, and I love the fact that he's always supporting his granddaughter and rooting for her, and even doing the sexy dances there that he's helped choreograph.
That's one of the greatest punchlines in movie history. The fact that all through this film, you know he's been helping her out with this dance. But then you don't until at the end of the film see what the dance is and how inappropriate it is.
But he's outstanding, and I just think the film itself is brilliant. And a lot of people don't know about it. It's a bit of a hidden gem, but I think it's a great film. And for me, luckily he's over 60 in this, and I absolutely adore him.
He was
about 80,
I think, wasn't he? He won the Oscar for it as well, didn't he? I think Best Supporting Actor.
Fully deserved.
Because I think it was the year that that Eddie Murphy was nominated for Dreamgirls, and he was the hard favourite to win. But then he released Norbit and ruined his chances.
And career. And life. Norbit.
No, man, it's because Oscar's so white.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I want to throw this over to the social media guys, and there's been a lot here, and you'll have to correct me if any of them aren't over 60, but I'm sure they are. J.A. Giles, which is at the J. Giles. Paul Newman in Road to Perdition.
Great film, great performance.
Michael Caine in Harry Brown.
Again, a brilliant film.
And is it Nick Nolte in Warrior?
Nolte.
Who's
Harry Brown was the other one I could have chose Michael Caine for.
Nick Nolte in Warrior. Mm-hmm. So good. Mm-hmm. Kitty Cat, which is at Wicked Deeper. Nick Nolte. Christopher Plummer in Beginners, which I have not seen.
Oh, it's the one with Obi-Wan. What's his name? Ewan McGregor, I think.
Never seen
it. Not Alec Guinness.
No.
And he agrees with you with Creed, Stallone.
Yeah.
Scott H., which is Scott Diaviello.
I'm guessing that is nothing like what it actually is.
Terrence Stamp for The Limey.
Yeah, that's brilliant, that film.
Jeff Bridges for True Grit and Peter O'Toole for Venus. Never seen it.
He was nominated for an Oscar for that, I think.
We threw it to Facebook, so we've got Wayne Saunders with Jason Robards for Magnolia.
Jason Robards is brilliant in that. Yeah. I think that might have been his last film, actually.
Michael Caine for Harry Brown and Oliver Reed for Gladiator.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I watched that this past weekend, Gladiator, for the first time since I was at uni, talking like 15 years ago.
Still as good?
Amazing. Forgot how great that film is.
Philip Handers said Clint Eastwood for Unforgiven, Al Pacino for Devil's Advocate. And Burt Reynolds in Boogie Nights.
Yeah, big time.
Couple more. Very good. Real Comic Heroes podcast have put Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. Nope.
Robert, he is good in that. Yeah, he can't say good as Unforgiven.
Robert Duvall in Get Low. And Sir Alec McGuinness in Star Wars. And finally, Gerald Carney, Jack Nicholson for The Departed, Richard Farnsworth for The Straight Story.
Yeah.
And again, Paul Newman for Road to Perdition. Some great ones.
Some great picks, choices, yeah. I think proof we're needed that old people aren't worthless, that they still have something to offer.
Yeah.
You can't just shunt them in a home.
No, don't shunt them in a home. Let them collect, to die. Collect the pension form. Don't give them it. You know, don't do that sort of thing.
Spend it on scratch cards. Yeah.
Don't do that sort of thing. Get them in a film.
Yeah. Or wipe their ass for them. If they're unable to themselves.
Yeah, don't, if they can do it themselves.
Yeah, don't just
they,
do it.
And they say no.
In Tesco, don't there's just an go old lady. Do you want me to wipe your ass?
Don't just go and do that. Okay.
So, Adam, over to you for the next topic.
So there's been a lot of talk after the Oscars of Sam Smith winning Best Original Song. We spoke about it before. Uh-huh. So we all hated it.
Yep.
Absolutely hated that song. Mm-hmm. It worked nicely for the sequence for Spectre. That's fine. But as a song, I don't like it.
No, it's dog shit.
So what I want to know is, I want to know your top three original songs developed for movies.
Nice. Wow. That silences my brain already.
I know, yeah.
Wow. Okay, cool. We'll bring that in 2 weeks' time.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see Grimsby, known to our American listeners as The Brothers Grimsby, which is the new supposed comedy film written by and starring Sacha Baron Cohen. He plays a kind of benefits scum football hooligan type in Grimsby, which is in sort of northeast of England. He had a younger brother who was taken away, I think that was adopted as a child, and he's been looking for this brother all his life. He then finds him, and it turns out his brother is this super spy, works in like Black Ops for MI6. And it is about the wacky adventures they then get into.
You did well there, actually. That's a really good summary of that film.
It is a very good
summary.
Yeah,
very good.
Permit me to venture my
opinion
first. Scores, yeah. This is, without a doubt, one of the worst films I have ever seen.
Me and Mark have already discussed this, and he's only going to give this 7.
It's not.
You know how bad he thinks it is.
It really is an atrocity. It isn't funny. It's offensive. It's sickening. It's stupid. It's supposedly only like 90 minutes long. It felt like 3 hours. It is utter, utter garbage. And there were three specific points during the film where if it weren't for the fact that we were reviewing this, I'd have up and left. I've never up and left the cinema before, but I was so close to doing it yesterday. I was just seething with rage and I'm still angry. It's possibly the worst film I've ever paid to see. I think it might have just overtaken Triple X as the worst film I've ever paid to see. I don't know if it's quite as bad as Battlefield Earth. I don't know. It might be.
But it is undoubtedly
one of the worst films I've ever seen. So, lads, thoughts?
I'm not going to lie now, and I've been thinking today how to kind of put it into words. This is honestly how I feel about this film. When I was coming back last night, driving home, I thought to myself, do I want to be in Skip to the End anymore? I thought to myself, do we want to do this podcast? Because the only reason we sat and finished that film was for the listeners.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't have gone, oh yeah, and then we suddenly all got out after an hour and then we don't know how it ended. We have to stick there. The listeners need to know the full picture.
That last half an hour might have made the film good.
But I literally thought to myself, this is episode 40, there's nothing else out. I don't know if I want to do the podcast anymore. It might be the final episode because this film was that bad. I can't believe we actually did that for the listeners. It is the worst piece of shit I have ever seen, and not even good shit like Sharknado 3.
Yeah.
It's absolutely dog shit.
Adam?
I found myself laughing at one point at the sheer ridiculousness that I was still sitting there watching it.
Yeah.
It wasn't even at the film. I started going... thinking, what the fuck am I doing here?
I do think one thing that I did take from the film is that Ben needs to buy a watch that has those like light up fingers, because he looked at his watch, must be 30-40 times, no exaggeration, and you're really trying to see like how long. And I think he needs a new watch.
It's an analog watch and it's not glow in the dark. And I was trying to work out what time it was, and there was one point where I managed to catch a bit of reflection off the screen and I realised that the film was only an hour old and I nearly cried. Couldn't believe it had only been an hour. It was like Chinese water torture. It was the worst thing I've ever had to sit through. I'm not just talking about films. Actually having to sit there for 90 minutes. It was like, you know, Clockwork Orange, when they put the thing in his eyes and he has to watch all that footage. That's what it was like for me. Hideous torture.
No, I completely agree. I've literally sat in hospitals for 2 hours that were more fun than sitting there watching this film. And felt shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to go to a hospice when my nan was dying, and I chuckled more. I did. I chuckled more at some of the things that go on in there than this film. I'm being genuinely serious.
The interesting thing is that...
Nan, I do miss you.
On Saturday, me and Ben were sat there talking about Sacha Baron Cohen's films, and before we'd even seen Grinsmith, it's kind of like the sliding scale of where his films are.
Yeah.
And how, since sort of Borat, they've just got progressively worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I hate The Dictator with a passion.
Yeah.
But I prefer to watch that than this.
Yeah. Compared to this, that was Godfather 2.
Yeah. Bruno is Godfather right now. Yeah.
So, that just kind of goes to show how bad this film is. If you're out there listening to this and you haven't seen it yet, don't.
Don't.
Just don't. I'm trying to think of like specific points. I mean, I sat there all night last night before the Oscars trying to think of any redeeming point in this film, and I came up with one.
Yeah. We might agree on this one.
The first person direction shots were
that
really
was
cool.
Really bloody good.
One of the opening action shots is sort of first person perspective, because the spies have these sort of special contact lenses in that they can then track back at MI6, and they're shot really well because it was directed by Louis Leterrier, who I think directed The Incredible Hulk. Don't quote me on that, but he's a good action director. So I'm with you. That was good.
Like literally, he's going through like Uganda, wasn't it? Mm. Hunting down this sort of arms dealer sort of fella, trying to interrogate him. And some of the action shots there from this first person perspective look great. And you kind of sit there when this bit's going on thinking, okay, maybe this film won't be too bad then.
Mm-hmm.
False hope.
Yeah.
And there's some of the best directed action scenes I've seen. Really that good. Mm. I thought this is incredible.
Brilliant.
I've not seen that before, that sort of episode. It worked so well. When he was punching him, it was really clever. Yeah. I thought, this
and
is awesome.
The gunshots were going off and things. It was really kind of fast-paced, furious kind of action. It was great.
But then
we meet Nobby.
Yeah.
Sacha Baron Cohen's character. And as I said, there were certain points in this film where I wanted to get up and leave. And there are two that I want to draw your attention to. The first one where I wanted to get up and leave... Nobby's brother, Sacha Baron Cohen's brother, is played by Mark Strong, who is a phenomenal actor, and I've lost all respect for him, the fact that he's in this, but we'll come back to that in a bit. He gets shot in the testicle with some sort of poison that he can only be saved from this by it being sucked out. So Sacha Baron Cohen's character then has to suck the poison out of his testicle. He's basically sat there being teabagged for this scene that goes on for about 10 minutes of him sucking on this testicle. And it's not shot in such a way that you can't see it. There's a big prosthetic nutsack dangling in his mouth. And I was I was just full of rage. I just wanted to get the fuck up and leave. I was just so angry at this. And I thought it couldn't get worse. Maybe about half an hour later, they're running around South Africa or somewhere, and they decide to escape from these rogue agents, and they climb into the vagina of an elephant. Two dudes, Mark Strong and Sacha Baron Cohen, climb into the vagina of an elephant, which is mental, first of all. Then a horny male elephant turns up and sticks his big elephant dong into the vagina, and they then decide that the only way to deal with this is to try and help him along, because it can take 3 hours for elephants to fuck. So they start wanking him off and get covered in elephant spunk.
At that point, when I saw Mark Strong covered in semen, I thought to myself, this guy's been in good films, you know, Kingsman, Sherlock Holmes, all these good films. What has he done wrong? What has he got on him? What has Sasha got on him? Has he found pictures on his computer?
Yeah.
Has he sent the wrong text message and gone, oh, that wasn't for you? He's like, you owe me big time now. There's no reason, unless it's £10 million or something to be paid, because you don't do that to your career.
No.
You're covered in semen.
Yeah, and as I've kind of said before, there are moments where you kind of question the ridiculousness about what you're doing. At these moments, I question my existence on the planet.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Who... Right. Sacha Baron Cohen, who keeps giving this money?
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, there are certain people in the film you can forgive them. Like, I can forgive Isla Fisher being in it because she's married to him.
Yeah.
She's doing a favour for her husband. But Mark Strong is a damn good actor. Ian McShane is a damn good actor.
Jim Royle.
Not so much.
Johnny Vegas.
Not so much. But why are they slumming it in this film? And something I was saying to Mark on the journey home yesterday, one of the credited actors in it was David Harewood. David Harewood is like a pretty big name in TV acting. He was in the first couple of seasons of Homeland. He's in the new Supergirl show. He was credited on the start credits for this. You see him once in the corner of a pub, and I don't think he has any lines. So I've got to believe that when they finally edit this film together, he looks at it and went, you've got to cut me out.
Yeah.
I can't be part of this. And, you know, more power to him for realising that he just...
And they said, okay, well, we're going to leave one scene where you don't talk in.
Yeah.
Just so we can have your name on the thing.
Well, they probably have to.
Yeah.
They have to in order to be able to pay him. You know, it would be a union thing. They have to leave him in at some point. But he must have said, I want out of this, as should everyone else in it. Mark Strong. What are you thinking? I can understand if Sacha Baron Cohen were to come to you and say, I've had an idea for a film, it's a bit wacky, you know, you're going to be my spy brother, I'm going to be an idiot from Grimsby, it should be a bit of fun, are you in? Yeah, I'm in. I can understand being sold on that. But as soon as he saw the script, so how are we going to film this bit where we're up in an elephant's vagina? How's that going to work? And then we get spunked in the face?
I like to think that the script he read before he signed on was totally different. He signed on, and when he got there on the first day of shooting, after signing this ironclad contract... He went, okay, so I'm ready to do this, got my script. Oh, that's we've revised the script since then.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, we've got a new script now. So we're filming the scene where we get in the elephant's vagina today. What?
Yeah. It's signed, dude. You're not getting out of this. It's signed.
He gets to the stage.
What?
Why is there an elephant here? Don't remember that in the script.
I recently watched Vanilla Sky again for the first time in years, and Penelope Cruz, I forgot how was good in that film. I actually give her full credit. I thought she was absolutely fantastic, and she was in the original Open Your Eyes. What is she doing? She is now dead to me.
Well, this is a question I wanted to ask Adam. Adam, you've seen Zoolander 2, so which is the worst Penelope Cruz comedy of the summer or of the year?
This is.
Yeah.
I came out of the cinema thinking... Zoolander 2 is not that bad.
Yeah.
If I'd rated Zoolander 2 last week, if we had reviewed that instead, it probably got a 1 or a 2.
Yeah.
After seeing that, it would get a 5.
And we're forgetting one big character now that's signed on that we're known for talking about.
She is a big character.
Rebel Wilson, who actually was only in it for about 5 minutes.
That was a saving grace.
And I think she probably filmed about an hour's worth and she went, look, even I need to get out of this. I'm not doing all these scenes.
She is... one of the worst actors who gets by on a gimmick of being overweight. That is her gimmick.
Yep.
Which is appalling. You know, I'm not having a go at fat people.
No.
But if that's your gimmick,
you
know, her most famous role is a character called Fat Amy. That is her whole shtick. And I just think she's a stone cold atrocity. But the blessing is she's only in this for 2 minutes.
We got into the cinema and there was probably, I'd say, 12 people in there. Not probably that's about it. It was a couple of couples who didn't laugh. But by us, we had these three girls, and they were talking all through the trailers. And I even turned around to you two and said, to be honest, this film's going to be that bad. I don't care if they're going to talk.
Mm.
They laughed at every single joke throughout this film. There's one bit where Sasha's character is going down on this large black lady.
Gabori Sidibe.
And is ridiculously covered in...
Academy Award nominated actress.
Yep.
And I think her pubes stick to his face like a goatee. I think I might have got the scenes mixed up.
No, that was when he's in the bathhouse and gets his wax stuck on. Oh god!
And these girls couldn't stop laughing. One of them was nearly falling over, and I just thought to myself, "That is it, isn't it? That's it." Those people love this film, and it's hilarious to them. So
Sacha Baron Cohen has a habit.
I'm done
of taking the mick out of these sorts of people and them holding up as a god for it. Ali G was an entire character that was contrived by essentially taking the piss out of Chav culture.
Yeah.
And they held him up as the finest Chav, the best Chav in the world. Mm-hmm. They didn't even realise he was mocking them.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with Al Murray. Al Murray's pub landlord character, the point of that was him. He was having a go at the small-minded little Englanders who were, hate the French and whatnot. His whole fan base now is those kind of nutters because they didn't realise it was satire. And it's true. The same is true of Sacha Baron Cohen.
He's... I will say it now, I thought Borat was one of the funniest films I've seen
in
years.
Film, yeah.
I saw it in cinema and I couldn't stop laughing. Mm. The Dictator was not very good. It was dreadful. But right now it's a masterpiece and it really is.
Yeah.
This is by far unexcusable. And that's the point. I can't now take him seriously. If he comes back, I think, didn't he turn up at the Oscars last night as Ali G?
Well, I was saying to Ben earlier, actually, before we
He's trying to be like,
recording.
Oh, look, I'm still funny.
I think the original plan was him to turn up as the character from Grimsby, because he always does this. Mm-hmm. When a film comes out, he goes on like a bit of a press junket kind of thing as the character. He did it with Bruno, if you remember. He landed on Eminem at like the MTV Awards and it was all part of this whole shtick. I think he was planning to come out as a guy from Grimsby, has seen how much this film has bombed, and just gone, nah, just do Ali G.
Yeah. Disgusting.
I don't know how this film is going to do in America. I mean, it's not going to do well here. The reviews have been atrocious, and it comes out in America, I think, in 2 or 3 weeks. I can kind of see how some of the jokes would work for a British audience, because we kind of understand the sort of benefits class culture in this country. These jokes aren't going to even have any context in America. I mean, they're not funny here, but at least they have context here.
Yeah.
This is not going to work in America at all. This is going to effectively end his Hollywood aspirations, Baron Cohen.
And I'm glad. I am. If you put this out and your
name
attached to it...
Maybe they'll stop giving him money.
Yeah. And then you'll sell fun films.
Well, what will happen is he'll get a six film deal with Netflix.
That's right.
Each one progressively worse than this.
This is disgusting. I'm absolutely furious. I want to score this because it's 15 minutes and it's shit. That's it.
Yeah.
It is, it's dog shit.
Right, let's score it. I'm going first and I'm being serious. Zero.
Yeah, me too.
Zero.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the first ever, skip to the end, zero.
Across
the board. Across
the board.
That's it.
What we're reviewing next week?
That's a good question. What are we reviewing next week? Animalisa we're reviewing.
Thank God.
Which was up for best animated film at the Oscars. But that makes it sound like it's going to be a kid's film or something. It's not. It's an adult thing from Charlie Kaufman.
A depressing story from what I've heard so far.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that very, very much.
The complete opposite of this. In every way.
Like the polar opposite.
Yeah, it's slightly depressing. It's not lighthearted. It's good. The complete opposite of this.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're like, why are these guys giving time to Grimsby? Stick around because we are going to be talking about Robocop in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So please stick around. Don't turn off. Please. But there you go. 0 out of 10. Episode 40, prize giveaway.
It's a big one.
Massive. Probably the biggest we've given away yet.
Box set of Coen Brothers films.
I know.
And a projector.
And a projector with a screen. So the question we put out there to promote Hail Caesar, which we're really looking forward to seeing.
Yeah.
Who plays the character Eddie Mannix? Ben, do you know that?
Is it Josh Brolin?
It is. So you can have the projector and screen.
Yay! Well done.
No, there's someone out there called Franiel Elizabeth, which is PJ on Twitter. You are winning that projector and screen.
What's their first name?
Fran. Well, it's basically Fran I Elizabeth, but it looks like Franiel Elizabeth. You've won that. And the box set is going to At the Wolf Servant. Now, I wanted to up the game from projector this time. I can't. We are giving away a car. No.
We're giving away a notepad.
Yeah. Our very good friends at Headshot Clothing have given us their brand new t-shirt, which is Dog Soldiers. An absolutely beautiful design.
It's really good design.
Stunning, and it's their new one. They're happy to send a small, medium, large, whichever one will get sent out to the winner. I've had people coming at me this week on Twitter saying, your questions are too easy, okay? So I'm going to make it the easiest it's ever been just to wind those people up. Dog Soldiers is directed by Neil Marshall, who directed Dog Soldiers. Okay? Send your entries on at STTE Podcast. Go on Facebook /SkipTheEndPodcast or email us, which loads of people have been emailing us with these competitions, podcast@skiptheend.co.uk. In the meantime, go on headshotclothing.com because these guys are genuinely really good friends of the podcast and they're the nicest people we've ever met.
Get yourself a snapback worn by Andrew Lincoln at Walker Stalker Con.
That's what I'm talking about. They've got loads of good stuff, but genuinely, this t-shirt for Dog Soldiers, which is directed by Neil Marshall, honestly, is one of the best designs I've seen, and we'll announce the winner in 2 weeks' time.
Welcome to the second annual Skip to the End Awards, aka the Skippies. This is where we give out awards to the very worst in cinema from the previous year. We have a variety of categories. We're going to look at screenplays, films, directors, actresses and actors. We're also going to give away our Lifetime Achievement Award for contributions to shit cinema.
And that is not something to be trifled at.
Oh, big time, big time. That's
a big award.
That is the real deal. So first of all,
big award.
very big
personalities.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first award that we're going to give out today is Worst Screenplay. Now, we're not all la-di-da like the Oscars and worry about adapting an original. We've lumped it all together. So, Adam, you're going to announce Worst Screenplay. Who are our nominees?
So the nominees are Kelly Marcel for 50 Shades of Grey. We have Doug Ellen for Entourage. And then we have Simon Kinberg for The Fantastic Four.
Ooh.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the winner is... Oh, it's Simon Kinberg for The Fantastic Four. Fully deserved.
Yeah, I mean, the film didn't have a third act. So, yeah. for that alone, the script was unfinished, clearly.
I can only presume that he put a lot of effort into this to win this award. Probably lost 40 pages of script. Too late, was on the deadline. Yeah. Had to hand it in. And there we go.
That's all been there when our homework's due and you hand it over and you're like, that wasn't what I should have really done. I could have done better.
Yeah, because you know, our homework was worth $100 million or something ridiculous like that.
I was always intended to start a franchise with my homework.
So yeah, a well-deserved winner. Well done, Simon.
I think all three would have been well-deserved winners, but Simon especially so. Next up is Worst Actress, Mark. What are our nominees?
Dakota Johnson for 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Favourite this year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Rebel Wilson for Pitch Perfect 2.
Yep.
And Jennifer Lopez for The Boy Next Door.
Ooh.
It's a tough one, this. All could be good, clear winners.
I mean, Dakota Johnson's the bookie's favourite, so we'll see if there's anything gets thrown up here.
The winner, Rebel Wilson.
Oh, it's a big surprise.
And already I've seen that people are predicting that she could go on to win 2 awards for next year for Grimsby already. People are saying.
Wow. You think she's going to go back to back?
That is unheard of.
So what you're saying is that Rebel Wilson could be the Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu of the Skippies and win back-to-back Skippies.
They are very similar people.
Wow.
Well, you know, tune in for that in a year's time.
Well done, though. Well done. You've put a lot of effort into that role and, you know, fair play.
Shocking. Disgraceful. Next up is Worst Actor, and our nominees are Adam Sandler, The Ridiculous Six, Adam Sandler, Pixels, Adam Sandler, The Cobbler.
Ooh. This is a difficult one, because often if someone gets nominated twice, it splits the vote,
let
alone 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Go on, then.
And the award goes to, surprisingly enough, Adam Sandler for The Ridiculous Six.
Oh, wow.
Netflix, you should have learned.
It's hard to say which is the worst performance out of those three, but Ridiculous Six, I've never seen him put less effort in. He's such a lazy actor these days. And he was lazy in Pixels, lazy in the... Well, he was just shit in The Cobbler. But Ridiculous Six, he wasn't putting an ounce of effort in.
That's great. He was just shit. Yeah, the laziness that he's now come to and the fact that they've given him all this money to do another... Probably, I wouldn't be surprised if he does The Ridiculous Seven. He's that sort of guy, isn't he? Hang on, didn't he win for last year as well?
He did. He won Worst Actor at the Skippies, the first annual Skippies, for Blended. So he is the Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu.
There you go.
Unfortunately, Rebel, unfortunately, we've already had a back-to-back Skippies winner. Let's check out next year, though, to see if he can go 3 times.
Wow.
He could be the Emmanuel Lubezki of the Skippies if he gets 3 in a row.
My money's on him already, and he hasn't even made that film that's going to win. Oh, poor Adam.
The next one is Worst Director. Mark, this is you. So what are the nominees?
Josh Trank, Fantastic Four.
Ooh.
Sam Taylor-Johnson, 50 Shades of Grey. and there were how do you say it?
Wachowski.
Wachowski siblings.
Not the Wachowski. Mike Wachowski.
For Jupiter Ascending. Not
at least you got the film name right. Well done.
The Wachowski siblings for Jupiter Ascending. Not Juniper, Jupiter.
Yeah.
Now, this film we've discussed, I think me and Ben saw it one day when we were bored.
Yeah.
It is very, very bad. I mean, the films now aren't as bad after I've seen Grimsby. I want to say it's one of the worst pieces of shit I haven't seen, but it's not fair to now put them in the same sort of thing. No. So it's terrible. Mm. I don't understand what some of the actors are doing. I don't know what Mila Kunis is doing at all. I just don't understand what
Eddie
she's doing.
Eddie Redmayne is garbage in this film, and he's a great actor.
I can't believe he's in that, to be honest.
That's got to be him taking a break.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll have some cash coming in, but I'll take a break. I'll take 6 months off.
Mm-hmm.
And just do this.
Have a bit of fun. Yeah.
I think he's gone, I'm going to do The Danish Girl, and the Oscars have gone, you know, you'll probably win for that. We'll actually not say to Leo, you can have it, but you've tarnished your name.
What you're saying is, he's done an Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, this is his norm. Yes. People have genuinely been saying that this sort of scuppered his chances of winning the big prize at the Oscars.
If your name's Eddie, you're cursed. That's it. But yeah, rightfully, Jupiter Ascending is absolute dog shit, and I'm glad it's won an award.
And one of the reasons why it deserves it for me, for the Wachowskis to get Worst Director, is because it looks terrible, like especially the CGI.
Ugh.
Coming from people who were some of the pioneers of CGI back in the days of The Matrix, and this film looks so cheap and tacky. Absolute garbage.
And they had a lot of money.
I mean, it's unfortunate that they couldn't be here. None of the winners could be here tonight.
No.
With the Oscars only being last night.
Yeah,
yeah. We don't expect that.
Because all these people are probably at the Oscars. The Academy
Awards. Oh yeah, I'm sure they're
there. I'm sure they're all invited, nominated, etc.
Oh, Rebel Wilson's definitely there.
Yeah, so... it's unfortunate they couldn't be here, but obviously the transatlantic flights is always going to be quite difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all right.
So the next one is Worst Film. Adam, who are the nominees?
Well, I'm particularly looking forward to this one.
Yeah.
This is one of the big awards. Not the Lifetime Achievement Award, but it's one of the big ones.
Yeah.
So we've got 50 Shades of Grey, Fantastic Four, and Jupiter Ascending. Now, three people that have kind of already kind of won things so far, really, apart from 50 Shades.
Yeah.
50 Shades is see if it can really, I guess, redeem itself by winning a Skippy now. and the winner is it's 50 Shades.
Oh,
yes,
there
it's
you
50
go.
Shades
there you
of
go.
Grey. It's redeemed itself. It's picked up a Skippy. I know that's what they were aiming for at the studio.
Yeah,
well done, guys.
Hats off to you.
All jokes aside, prior to going to see Grimsby, I would say that 50 Shades of Grey is the worst film we've reviewed, worst new film we've reviewed for the podcast. But now we've seen Grimsby.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I actually, if someone said to me, here's two discs, one of them's Grimsby, one of them's 50 Shades of Grey, which one do you want to watch? It'd be 50 Shades.
Yeah. I would rather sit through that towering inferno of shite again than Grimsby.
If they offered me a gun as well, I'd shoot myself.
Let's not take away from 50 Shades, though. It deserves that
it's
title.
It's fully deserved.
It's a lot of shite. We've done a podcast on that, which people still don't believe until they go on our website and see.
Yeah.
And it was, until Star Wars, our most downloaded episode of the whole time we've been around, which is
depressive.
Mental.
Yeah.
Actually mental. Ridiculous.
I think it's now time for the big prize.
The Lifetime Achievement Award.
I don't know the nominations for this.
Well, we don't.
No.
There are no nominees. You know, last year this big prize, aka the Hall of Shame, went to Lars von Trier,
and rightfully so.
Rightfully so. This year, the winner of the second Lifetime Achievement Award is Kevin Smith.
No way. Don't agree.
For his contributions to shite cinema.
Well done, Kevin.
Much deserved.
He couldn't be here either, because he's doing Moose Jaws right now as we're speaking.
He's really trying to cement that second Lifetime Achievement Award.
Now, I want to argue about this, because you know I have a lot of love for Kevin Smith.
Why?
Dude, Dogma, Clerks, Clerks 2, Morrats, Chasing Amy, masterpieces.
Right, Clerks 2 and Morrats are both terrible, you know this.
There are three films there he's instantly going to disagree with.
But I can't argue. Tusk made it into my top five worst films of all time.
Yeah.
So for that, and that was only last year.
Because I was thinking we might need to hold off a year before we give him this award, because we need to see Yoga Hosers. But then I saw the trailer for Yoga Hosers. Good enough. Cemented his place. Don't need to see the film.
He read the title, Moose Jaws. That's dumb. Well done, Kevin. That's a big award.
It's a big award.
Huge.
Well done.
This is... been a very good ceremony, I think. I mean, a lot of people tuned in to the Oscars, but this is the one that people are talking about. We always end the year with, you know...
It's the Skippies, man.
That's it.
It's big,
this is
big
it.
Business.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
This is what studios appear to toil away all year for. From,
yeah.
From the, some of the films they've churned out, I can only assume that this is what they're aiming for.
And, I don't want to jinx it, but I'm thinking in next year's Skippy ceremony, we're going to be talking a lot about Grimsby. And we'll be the only people on earth still talking about Grimsby.
I hope they actually bomb Grimsby so it doesn't exist, because then everyone can forget about it. Because imagine driving, oh, there's Grimsby, that's a film, isn't it? Just take it out.
If you lived in Grimsby, you would leave.
Yeah.
Now.
One joke in the film I did like, actually, is you see a sign, the Grimsby sign, that says sort of Sister City of Chernobyl, which I thought was quite funny. But it's harsh on the residents of Grimsby, because Grimsby's not that bad compared to a lot of other places.
No, it's actually not that bad.
And I'm pretty sure they filmed it in Essex, which is worse.
Yeah.
Well, stick around, come back in a year. You know, this awards are huge, and it's shown today the sort of...
People want to win them, man.
The amount of talent that goes into this, you know, all the different people, the hard work, those studios, the budgets, and...
Just look at...
Well done.
Look at Mr. Sandler, I mean...
Well done.
He's toiled away doing 3 films this year.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that he's got a good chance at a second...
Well
Scooby.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
He's made history.
He has.
And he's made shit.
We're nearly there now, Mark. It's skipped back in time again. It's 1990. So almost at 90. We've got one more to go through, and then you can get into 1989.
You're going
to
bloody love it, aren't you?
Are you happy already?
I've been doing some research ahead of myself, and it's not good. It's amazing for what's there, but there's too much choice. It's literally like going to a sweet shop and being like, you have one sweet, and there's Cola Cubes, Pear Drops, Licorice All Sorts, you know.
It's all there. And you're
everything.
You're
and like... I only allowed one, and I just want to put more in my mouth. But anyway, 1990
then. Who wants this first?
I'll go first, purely because, again, this is one of those that's blatantly obvious. You know what I've picked. Of course I've picked Goodfellas. Of course I've picked Goodfellas.
I was looking down the list of Skip Back the other day, and I realised that me and you choose the same film quite often.
We do, yeah.
And this is no exception. I've gone with Goodfellas as well.
It is one of the greatest films of all time.
It is, and obviously I was famously known for a long time as the man who had never seen Goodfellas.
Yeah.
We first episode of the podcast, I got it as my homework, and I haven't looked back since. I mean, it's an unbelievable film, really, and obviously loosely kind of based on a true story as well, which kind of makes it even better for what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it is balls out ludicrous that someone was so blasé about how they were a mobster and how they wanted to be a mobster.
Yeah.
But Ray Liotta is just phenomenal.
Yeah, he absolutely nails it as Henry Hill. And it's always strange to me that film wasn't as beloved then as it is now. Mm. Now people look back on it as a masterpiece, but it was massively overlooked in the Oscars. You know, Scorsese should have won Best Director, it should have won Best Film.
Scorsese's a genius.
Yeah.
Proved that with it. I mean, even Leo last night thanked him.
He did, yeah, yeah.
He said thank you to Martin Scorsese for teaching me a lot and pretty much everything I needed to know. So I think the fact that it was, like you say, it's looked upon now as such a good film is very odd, because really, at the time, it was something quite original.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Scorsese was known for his gangster films, but it was a very different sort of take on it, and it's aged brilliantly as well. Mm. It doesn't show its age. I wouldn't think it was 26 years old.
That's probably why it's looked upon so favourably still now. Even more so now, the fact that it has aged well, it has stood the test of time.
Yeah, and do you know who I miss? I miss Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
Why did he just stop making films?
Because he probably didn't want to turn out like De Niro and Pacino.
Yeah, maybe. I think the last thing I saw him in was like Lethal Weapon 3 or something.
Oh, maybe he did then.
I do miss that guy.
Yeah.
He's not dead, is he?
No.
No.
No, he's still around.
But doing what?
I don't know.
Probably just enjoying retirement.
It could be.
Yeah.
It's not like he's probably had out of your strap for cash or anything like that.
He went out looking at the lights. I'm happy with that.
he's not dead, Mark.
But I just like the fact that he hasn't tarnished it. You know, he can look back at his CV and go, you know, Home Alone.
Yeah.
Casino.
Home Alone 2. I don't think he did. I don't think he did any others. But I miss that guy. I want to see him.
Yeah, Joe Pesci rules.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. I haven't agreed. I've gone with Stephen King's Misery.
Yeah, good film.
This is down to basically Kathy Bates.
Yeah.
I think she delivers one of the finest performances from an actress ever.
You dirty bird.
Scary as hell.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that this guy has a crash and is rescued by the most psychotic fan you're ever going to meet is terrifying.
It's something that could only come from the mind of Stephen King.
Mm-hmm. And usually a lot of people criticize that his books don't work well on the screen. This, I think, worked perfectly. There's some, like, obviously The Green Mile, which we know, and Shawshank that work, but there's a lot of stuff like Firestarter and the real low-budget stuff that doesn't... They just don't...
I think that's the key thing. A lot of the time with his stuff, it depends whose hands are on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you look... Because other stuff, like, I mean, It...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was perfect. Yeah, The Mist was done extremely well. So a lot of his stuff does translate well to screen.
Generally speaking, if Frank Darabont is anywhere near it, it'll turn out well.
Frank
Depardieu.
But... James Caan in this is absolutely outstanding, and you are in his head the whole film. You're thinking, what the hell is going to happen to me now? And it's terrifying. And there's a one scene that will always stick, which everyone right now is saying probably as they're listening, yes, the leg break. You know, that is horrendous and will stick with you like the kind of curb stomp on American history. It's that crack of the leg.
And that's it. It's the sound effect.
It is. It's horror. It's absolutely horrible. But the fact of everything she's doing is just to get in his mind and completely just, it's just savage. It's absolutely horrendous. And I think since then, she's never matched that performance. You know, it's her outstanding performance.
So her as Joe in The American Office, what wasn't up there?
That was great, but this is just her moment. You know, actors have their moment, which is that is it, and they're never going to top it. For me, that's it. It's unbelievable. I love the way it's filmed. Again, there's some snow outside. So there's
always with the bloody snow.
We get
snow.
A bit of that, but it's a great, everyone in it's brilliant. Most of the film is just the two of them. And I think it's done very, very well. And I think for 1990, there's a lot of good films.
It's a captivating film as well.
It is.
Let me ask you a question, because you're a big fan of Stephen King's books. Have you read Misery?
Yes.
Did they change it much for the film?
No,
or is it
faithful?
No,
it's very pretty much honest, yeah. So what was the bit where she notices an ornament's been moved or something's been moved? Mm. And it's just, you just see it.
It's frightening.
You can see her eyes like, he's actually got out of bed then. Obviously something's not right. Oh, God. I want to watch it again.
Mm.
Really good. Let's listen to the social media ones because there's a lot out this year that were really good. Charles Daniels on Twitter, Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's all right.
It's all right.
Johnny Depp, good.
No good fellas.
No. Rob has put, who's at UNS underscore AUF underscore SIE, Tremors. Great film. that is an awesome film. I love Tremors.
Ben, you going to watch it?
No.
It's about these underground slugs, isn't it?
Who is it that's in that? Is it like Kevin Bacon?
Kevin
or someone?
Bacon,
yeah,
it's brilliant.
Mark's tried to sell that film to you so many times.
Yeah, it's never going to work.
James Bailey has put Predator 2. Good film, but he did put then it starts the shite of Aliens versus Predator after that. So it's kind of
about 15 years afterwards. Yeah, that really kick-started that film.
Anthony Lusano has put Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The first film is bloody good. I really like that movie.
Good fun.
Why are you laughing? Do you not like it?
I liked it when I was a child, yeah.
Melanie, which
That's
is...
because you didn't like anything as a child, from what I hear of you.
At Oscott Tea Lady Ghost. Do you like that film?
No.
Not a fan?
No.
That's the one that Whoopi Goldberg won an Academy Award for.
Yeah.
That was the last time a black actress or actor had won an award.
Definitely not true.
Benjamin Holdsworth.
The Oscars aren't that bad.
They will be.
Jamie Foxx won in 2003.
No, a black actor has not won an Oscar for 26 years.
Yeah.
Fact.
Benjamin Holdsworth, Dancing with Wolves. He's put, nothing has come close to replicating that piece of magic, which is a cinematic treat. A.W. Colzer has agreed with Goodfellas. And finally... Ben Bowman has put Troll 2.
A classic.
Well, after you said The Room that year, I'm not surprised you didn't go with Troll 2.
Well, that's it. That's it. The 90s are over.
Done
I am
and
now
dusted.
So next time we skip back to 1979.
No, that'll happen. Stick around. Oh, 80s, I can smell it. I can taste it, and I'm ready.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Rewatch this time round is 1987 classic RoboCop. I'm not even going to, you know, sit on the fence and say, oh, you know, we'll wait until we get into the review to see what we think. You know I love it. I know you guys love it. Let's just talk about how bloody great it is.
Sounds good to me. One of the greatest 80s films ever made.
Big time.
Sticking it right out there. Mm-hmm. The most depressing part about watching this film, again, they don't make films like this anymore.
Yeah.
A really good story. Lots of good action scenes, some of the best violence you're ever going to see on screen, mm-hmm. and just a solid hour and 40 minutes of just awesomeness.
Yeah.
Done.
One of the most amazing things about this film is how when you sit down to watch it, you'll get sort of 20, 30 minutes in, and you'll be like, I forgot how violent this was. Even though you didn't really, you knew mm-hmm. how violent this film was. But every time you watch it, you still sit there and think, I forgot how violent this was.
Yeah.
Just the opening bit with the ED-209
yep.
shoots up the board member and there's blood flying everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just like...
That's horrendous.
Oh. You're like, oh, that's really... That's awful. And then it gets to the bit where Murphy gets captured by the gang and they're literally just... Christ.
And blowing his extremities off. Yeah. It is an absolutely brutal film. One of the things I love about it is... It was, you know, it's a science fiction film. It's a film about a... it's a film about a cyborg cop. And I think the 80s was the best era for sci-fi. Because science has moved on so much, a lot of what happens now in sci-fi films that are released, you look at it and go, yeah, that could happen.
Yeah,
like you watch something like The Martian and you think, that's probably only a couple of years off. I could believe that.
That someone could actually go to Mars.
Exactly, yeah. But in the 80s, because science was so far behind, you know, people were still playing on NESes and whatnot, the idea of a cyborg cop is so out there and so mental. It was just a time where there was so much, it was such an open feel for wacky ideas that you could come up with. They didn't have to be based in, they only had to be tenuously based in science. They could be so far out there and so crazy. Whereas now, because science is so far advanced, it doesn't feel like that anymore. Everything feels just one step from reality. 80s sci-fi, you can't beat it.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing. I think like you've really hit the nail on the head there. Everything that was done in sort of late 70s to sort of early 90s was... As you say, seemed really far-fetched.
Yeah.
But if like someone suggested to you 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that something was going to... Like, we're going to be on Mars soon, you still wouldn't have said, no, we won't.
Mm.
Yeah.
You can believe it. And that kind of sucks a little bit of the fun out of it for me, because the fiction element of the science fiction is what sells it.
Whereas now, obviously, we have films about how love can solve all problems across
five dimensions. Well, love's more powerful than science, apparently, according to Mr. Nolan.
And a half man, half dog can happen in Jupiter.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
So, yeah.
I just lose reality, really. It's a shame.
Whereas RoboCop is a quintessentially 80s, balls-to-the-wall sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
Put that on the poster now.
Yeah. Just everything about it is wonderfully over the top.
Yeah.
And fantastically brutal.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of the film.
See, I agree with you 90% of what you say, but I don't think that is the whole point of the film, because it's directed by Paul Verhoeven, who is a great satirist. In anyone else's hands, this could have just been a balls-to-the-wall action film, but because he's a guy who cares about analogy and satire, that has deeper meaning. Same thing with Starship Troopers. In another director's hands, that could have just been an action film, but he made it a satire on war. And that's what I think makes it special and puts it a cut above. Even a cut above another Paul Verhoeven film like Total Recall, which doesn't really have the same satirical basis as this. This is just something else when it comes to 80s sci-fi films. It's on another level for me.
I agree with what you're saying. It's a very interesting look at, say, privatisation as well of government resources, because the police are owned by essentially a private company.
Yeah.
And there's the whole analogy of the Fourth Directive, where the board members of the company that own have actually put in a directive to say you can't arrest any of this.
Yeah, exactly. So where's the accountability then?
Yeah, so there's no accountability. Mm. So I understand what you're saying. It is a very, very much a... Yeah, there is a meaning behind the film as well. Perhaps something that gets lost in 2 and 3.
Yeah, no, they were just action films.
So,
yeah.
This is very special. There's a lot of emotion in it as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when he finds out that his wife's moved away and he starts remembering things that happened to him,
mm-hmm.
it gets quite...
There's a great line where he's with his partner, Lewis, and it's towards the end of the film and he's taking his helmet off and he's talking to her about his family and he says something along the lines of, I can feel them, but I can't remember them.
Yeah.
And that's great, that is. That's a great line.
I love the partnership of Lewis and Murphy. Those two together, like, when she recognises it's him, you are literally going, oh my God, like, whoa, that is quite special. And then when she, you know, it's that partnership from the start, the love's there.
She literally recognised him just from his jaw.
And I think that's an example of really efficient storytelling.
Yeah.
The chap who wrote the script, Ed Neumeier, I think his name was, the fact that Murphy and Lewis haven't been together for years as partners. They only meet each other at the start of the film. But you so quickly believe in their relationship as partners that you understand why she feels that way.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's really efficient storytelling, really well done.
Yeah, and it's certain things that get missed from sci-fi films now. There isn't that level of storytelling.
Yeah.
Now, and this is another big difference between sci-fi now and sci-fi then. Sci-fi then was, we need to actually have some kind of plot involved. There needs to be some, because we don't have the visual effects.
Mm.
We're not going to be able to make this an amazingly looking film. Sci-fi now, for the most part, is look at all these visual effects we can do.
Yeah.
We don't need a story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We'll just show loads of ship battles across space and things like that. It's just boring. It's dull. It's stuff we've seen before.
Yeah.
What I think works really well in Robocop is, what's the character Kurtwood Smith plays as the bad? What is that short?
Clarence Boddicker.
That's it, Boddicker. The fact is, he is one of the most menacing bad guys I've seen on film.
Yeah.
And it's just because he's a badass. He hasn't got special guns or he's got special magical powers. He's just a bit of a head case.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really look butch. He hasn't got massive muscles. He's not stacked.
It's his brutality.
It's his actual... Yeah, it's terrifying.
He walks into Norton's house and shoots him twice in the leg.
Yeah.
Four times.
Without even blinking.
What I read something that apparently Kurtwood Smith didn't actually audition for the Boddicker role. I think he auditioned for Ronnie Cox's role as like the head of OCP. And then they sort of offered him the job. And when he turned up, he was like, oh, no, you're not him. You're playing Boddicker. And it's because Verhoeven thought that even though he didn't have that, he wasn't like a big built muscle man or anything. He said he reminded him of like a Nazi because of his glasses. He looked like Heinrich Himmler or something like that, which would be a different kind of villain.
Yeah.
And he is just a really sinister. And like Kurtwood Smith over the years turns up in all sorts of shows, you know, you'll see him all over the place, but he will always be Boddicker to me. Like, did you ever used to watch that 70s
show?
Yeah,
he was the dad.
He was the dad in that. And he was hilarious.
Quite menacing in that.
Exactly right. He was hilarious, but he had this menacing edge. Every now and again, he was Boddicker.
But he's definitely one of my top 10 bad guys, and this film cemented that.
Speaking of people from the film cropping up elsewhere, Leon Nash, played by Ray Wise.
Yeah.
Who also went on to be in Tim and Eric's.
Yep, Shrimp.
As the Shrimp Healing Center. I must say, I did chuckle to myself when he first appeared on screen.
As did I, because I'd forgotten he was in it. Because I've not watched this in maybe 5 or 6 years. I'd forgotten Ray Wise was in it at all.
So what about obviously, Murphy's character, Peter Weller? I think that actor is one of the best performances of the 80s.
Yeah.
He's believable.
He's brilliant, yeah.
His face, the actual...
And it's a difficult role to play with any kind of emotion, because for the most part, you're behind a mask for probably 65% of the film.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to be playing someone who is only just regaining their emotion back anyway.
Yeah.
So we see him at the start portraying the cop, Murphy, and then we have to see him kind of gradually descend back into what is essentially a human being.
He does it brilliantly.
And he does it fantastic.
Yeah, he really does.
When the helmet first comes off, you see him in battle scenes and he's so stoic, his face barely moves and he doesn't seem to blink.
Yeah.
And it's only right at the end when he goes in and ends up killing Ronnie Cox's character, the bad guy. And then the other guy, the head of OCP, says to him, you know, what's your name? And he just sort of turns and kind of smirks, Murphy, and then walks out. And that's when he's regained his humanity.
Yeah.
It's a great performance from Peter Weller. Super.
Unbelievable. And his voice works so well. I love the fact when they're in the supermarket and the guy's about to get, where's your safe? Kicks over all the stuff and goes in the safe. And he just walks in. It looks a joke shooting at him. It's like, you're not going to defeat this guy, dude. Run. Seriously, get the hell out of there. And he doesn't even like kill him. He just literally picks him up and just chucks him. Yeah. And he's like, I'm here to save the day. I don't want to kill you.
Yeah.
But if you're going to fuck with me, I'm going to fuck with you. Brilliant. And the lines, you know, some of the quotes.
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
So good. And it's just 80s. You don't get that anymore. You don't get films that you'll be quoting now, do you, as much?
No.
Just stupid crap. But yeah.
Oh, well, you mean you're not going to be quoting Grimsby for 20-odd years from now?
Well, you know, there might be some things that I quote about Grimsby several odd years from now.
But you're right, when you talk about the lines...
Stay out of trouble.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble. Just, oh, my God. Such good
stuff.
It's
the delivery, though, as well. It's not just the lines, it's the delivery.
Yeah.
I'd buy that for a dollar. How great is that guy? So good. But again, like... This makes up for Grimsby. I want to stay with Skip the End now. I don't want to leave. Oh, I want to carry. This is it. Now, this is.
I don't think anything's ever going to make it for them, but it's a good start.
Do you know what else I love about this film as well? It's got one of the greatest theme tunes of all time. Oh, so good.
There is a few bits about it that unfortunately make it look a bit dated nowadays.
Yeah.
The computers and things and the light, the polygraph thing that's going on.
Yeah.
But you just kind of suspend that. You're like, I don't care.
Yeah, absolutely. I read somewhere that a lot of the graphics were done on a Commodore.
That is
how old school this film is.
Commodore 64, sitting there doing code.
That's amazing. Oh.
It does look odd. And of course, the costume.
Yeah.
It does look aged. But it's one of those that, because it's so great, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
And I found, it's rare that this happens, but I found myself probably about an hour in, I realised that I was smiling. I realised I had a big Cheshire grin on, and I had done through the whole film. It's just one of those films that just delights me from start to end. Everything about it, even the sort of heavy-handed religious symbolism, which would annoy me in most other films, doesn't annoy me. Because, you know, there's a bit on the end where Robocop literally walks on water. Like, yeah, we get it, you're Jesus. But it works. It's just so good.
You just
good.
Don't care about it. You're like, okay, no, it's fine.
Brilliant. I absolutely loved it, mate. And I'm so glad you picked this. It's just been... ace.
It's a wonderful film. And Rich, friend of the podcast who came and did an episode with us recently, he and I were talking about this recently, and one of the things he mentioned was how there was a thing back in the day on British TV and on American TV of having sort of TV edits of violent films where they would redub some of the dialogue. And he was saying that one of his favourite ones was the old sort of version of Robocop they used to show on ITV, where instead of saying motherfucker, they'd say mother crusher. And it got me to thinking about that, and it's true. I remember being a kid and watching all these films on ITV. Another one was Die Hard. So you know the line, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. On the ITV edit, it used to be, yippee-ki-yay, kimo-sabi. It's just amazing.
Maybe this could be a new game show. We bring watered down quotes.
Pre-watershed.
Yeah, and they have to work out what film they're from.
Could you really do a pre-watershed version of Robocop?
I don't know. ITV tried, though. They must have cut everything out.
It has been years until we got the uncut version. It was years. Yeah. I mean, the robot going wrong and shooting the crap out of that guy's chest is horrific. You said, like, you can't believe how violent it is. That used to be about 10 seconds. Now it's about 50 seconds of his chest literally just getting more and more blown to pieces.
And I think this is one of the reasons why you kind of forgive the fact that parts of it look dated.
Mm.
Because the visual effects... when he's getting like his extremities blown off, when the guy's getting pumped in the chest from like basically two miniguns, they all look great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like in the sort of uncut version when you see Boddicker get killed with the spike and they actually linger on that a bit more. On the uncut version, or on the cut version, sorry, you don't see it at all, you just hear the noise.
And of course the nuclear waste acid.
Oh, that's great, isn't it? When he's just face is
horrible.
He's just sort of running off and running into people as well.
And how good does it look when he actually then gets hit by the car?
Yeah.
It looks brilliant. That's really hard to do well. And it just like explodes. Incredible. Absolutely awesome.
It is 80s. It is so of its era.
Yes.
But just so brilliant.
One thing, like, it might just be because I haven't seen it for a while, but how good do the guns sound? Maybe it's just something I've just done, but I stuck the Blu-ray on at home and it just sounded epic. Like,
I love his gun as
well. Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, that's huge.
Weird kind of like hand cannon.
Yeah.
that fires three bullets essentially at once. It's like,
yeah, because apparently it wasn't even going to be that. He was just going to have sort of a regulation gun. But when they put it in his big RoboCop hands, it looked paltry. So they gave him this hand cannon, and it looks so much better. One of the things I love about the performance from Peter Weller is, you know, his robotic movements, the way that his head moves independently of his body. So if he's turning around a corner, his sort of head will twist first and then his body afterwards. It's so brilliant how he's worked that out, that element of the performance.
And how he kind of faces up to people as well. Mm. So he'll turn, like, he'll turn first and then he'll make sure that he's literally square onto them.
Yeah.
He won't just, like, when you're talking to him, if someone from the side chats, sometimes you just turn your head. But he doesn't. He literally puts his full body in
front
of him.
That's great. Yeah. Works so well. Do you want to hear what the guys on social media say? Because I'll put it out there. So Bruce Lee, which isn't actually Bruce Lee.
Is it not?
Well, no, you can't, can he? With the underground of the Chinese mafia.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's at BleeNeo101. I don't need to rewatch it. I've seen it over 100 times. It's been my favourite film ever since I saw it when he was 8 years old in the cinema. How cool is that?
Then why would you have an issue with rewatching it? Why say I don't need to rewatch it? Just rewatch it again.
Yeah, just watch it again. Make it 101. Adventure Frequency, come with me or there will be trouble. Mm-hmm. Fine, you can say that. Dominus Minus, one of the greats. He's even got an OCP t-shirt.
Nice.
That's awesome. Cool. Lee Marriott, stay out of trouble. Fine. Facebook, Kieran Leeson, I love this film. The Murphy death scene is still one of the most uncomfortable things I still watch to this day. Mm-hmm. And Mike Brown, one of the best films of the 80s. You guys have picked a great rewatch.
A lot of pressure then.
No, not one person doesn't like RoboCop. If you ever meet anyone that doesn't like RoboCop, don't speak to them.
I don't know that I have. I think that's legit. I don't know if I've ever met anyone who doesn't like RoboCop.
I've literally met people who like RoboCop and haven't seen RoboCop.
Yeah. If you've watched RoboCop and you actually don't like it, tweet us so we can block you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let us know. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Right then, we need to score it.
Oh yeah.
Do we? I thought this is going to be as easy as Grimsby, surely. Just in the other way.
I'm going to go all out. I'm going to do it. We did it for, I think, Blade Runner. It's going to be a 10. It's just a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. And listen to us. We're loving life again.
I'm going to go one below that. I'm going to say 9, purely because it isn't in like my top 5 films of all time. I don't know that it's a perfect film. It's a damn good film. I love it to bits. I would call it a high 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, I use my rule all the time. It's got to be a 10.
Nice.
It stands the test of time. It's there. Fair play. Constantly there. It bunches up from the 9 to the 10 for me.
Well, even though I've given it a 9, because you've both given it 10, I'm more than happy for it to have an overall 10 out of 10.
Today we've had a 0 and a 10. There you go.
Jesus Christ.
And now what you need to say is that when people are like, oh, what you got on the next episode? You say, we're reviewing 2 films. Yeah. One of them got a 0. One of them got a 10. It's Grimsby and RoboCop. Which one do you think got which? Yeah.
Right then, guys, it's my choice for the next rewatch.
Yeah.
You were saying earlier we're going to be watching Animalisa next, which is going to be, I believe, one of the best animated films for years. I think it visually looks absolutely close to perfection.
Yeah, it's a very odd sort of stop motion
type film. Really, really well done computer graphics and stuff. So I want to go for the opposite side
of
that.
It's not computer graphics, I've just said it's stop motion. literally just said those words.
So it's some of the best...
Stop motion
you've ever seen. So I want to pick something that isn't known for its great animation.
Oh, God.
So I was in HMV the other day, and I couldn't believe it when I saw this on Blu-ray on the actual side of the counter. So I brought it with me today just to prove it actually exists. I've talked about it before.
Oh, no.
Birdemic, Shock and Terror. I've been researching bad films like Troll 2 and Room. They have said this is the worst film ever made and the worst computer graphics that you can't believe. So I thought, let's do it, guys.
Yeah. When they said it was the worst film ever made, was that before Grimsby came out?
Yeah.
I
don't know. I've not seen it. You two haven't seen it. It's just a funny rewatch. But I'm looking forward to it and it could be good fun.
It's literally a watch.
Yeah. So next time, Birdemic, Shock and Terror.
Hi there. This is Jim Bowen here and you're listening to Skip to the End podcast. And now it's time for Raging Bullseye. Listen up, here we go.
Thanks very much for that, Jim Bowen. It was a nice little introduction and taking your time out from your busy schedule. Really appreciate that. So, welcome, as you heard. This is the very first game show of Raging Bullseye. Got to be really careful how I say that. I do not want to get sued for this. But it's our homage to the amazing ITV 80s, 90s. I think it went to about mid-90s. We all watched it as kids.
Had a second coming, of course.
Yeah, which we don't talk about because it didn't have the original. But yeah, amazing Bullseye. If you've never seen it, go on YouTube, watch all 19 years worth of the show. It's incredible. Some of the prizes.
If you have Sky, just turn on Challenge because it's always on.
Always. And it's a great... Jim. To be fair, Jim Bowen back in the day was incredible on this, wasn't he? He was one of the best hosts.
He's incredible now, isn't he?
Yeah,
just proven.
Yeah. Big time. Sunday afternoons used to be sit around, watch this show. Mm-hmm. We all love darts here anyway, so we've made a game show of Raging Bullseye. What the theme is, basically, on a dartboard, you get 1 to 20. We're going to take it in turns to throw a dart, and that will determine your topic. So if you hit a 7, that could be a certain topic, for example, remakes or something. To score, I thought it'd be good that we actually make it quite good, because you guys are good darts players. We want to try and get some good...
I'm not
at darts. If I hit the board, I've done well.
Yeah, I'm not throwing a dart. In close to 10 years.
That's okay. Well, I'm starting to worry that I've now put the dartboard up in front of my window then, because I don't
I've
going to end well.
Literally not thrown a dart in about 10 years.
Brilliant. Yeah. So the way it's going to score is if you hit a single, it's 1 point.
Yeah.
If you hit a double, it's 2 points. If you hit a treble, which is hard, you're going to get 3 points.
Yeah.
But to make it more exciting, if you hit the bull... Or the, what's the...
So the inner or outer bowl.
The inner or outer bowl.
Yeah.
You can choose the topic.
Okay.
So it's going to take a bit of skill, this, because there's some topics on here that aren't going to be very nice. I'm not going to lie to you. But all the questions are quite all right.
Ben's looking forward to topics such as Forrest Gump, I assume.
Yes, I will be avoiding that as best as I can.
The film or the topic.
All of the above.
And the winner will be whoever has the most points at the end. And I think it's fair that we have 5 questions each.
Five throws each.
Yeah.
What happens if we're a tie?
I think we should just have a game of darts.
Yeah. Three darts. Highest score wins. All right.
That's it. I was going to do a final round where if you can hit 101 or more with 6 darts, you win a caravan or a speedboat. But yeah. Universal, the tight git, said no.
Oh, shame.
So... You know,
we've only given us projectors.
Yeah.
And also, we like to keep these episodes to around an hour and a half to 2 hours. If we were trying to get 101, it'd be a 9-hour podcast.
I always used to love it on the actual show. It'd be like, non-darts player first. And it literally, like, won. Missed the board.
You'd just hear us in amazement being like, okay, you were close then. What did you get? 39.
So who wants to throw first today on Raging Bullseye? I'm happy with you.
I want Adam to go first. As he's just said, he's not thrown a dart in 10 years. I'm intrigued.
Okay.
Go on then, Adam. Up you go.
Just throw one then, didn't I?
Yeah, just throw one for now.
Adam has hit...
3.
Number 3 is movie soundtracks, Mark.
Which famous soundtrack features the track Kiss from a Rose by Seal?
Almost Famous?
Nope.
I know it. Can you steal?
No.
You won't get a point.
It's Batman Forever.
It is.
Oh.
Kiss from a rose out of the blue. Ooh.
It's a tune. So, Ben, your first throw. This is tense. What number was that?
Single 5.
Single 5. The topic is Steven Spielberg movies.
Oh, here we go.
Which movie did Steven Spielberg get a Best Director Oscar for?
Has he only won one?
I'm saying he has now.
Oh, Lord. E.T.
Can I have a go?
Yep.
Saving Private Ryan?
Schindler's List.
Ah, of course. Has he literally only won one?
Probably.
Or is that just the only one you saw?
Only one I saw.
Yeah.
Adam, step up. Ooh, is that number 20?
20, yeah.
Yeah, regular.
Single 20.
Your topic is The Matrix Trilogy.
Oh, brilliant.
Now, if the question is based on the first Matrix, he's got a chance.
So... In The Matrix, what is Neo's real full name?
Ooh. Kevin Anderson?
Nope.
I think it's John Anderson.
Thomas Anderson.
Oh, Thomas Anderson. Mr. Anderson.
So, it's nil-nil at the moment, boys. Ben.
It's like one of those shit penalty shootouts, you see.
Right, I could purposefully aim for 15, which is Kevin James movies.
So, Ben, second dart.
5.
Ooh, Wes Anderson films.
Ooh.
Who has Wes Anderson written the most screenplays with?
Owen Wilson.
Correct.
Booyah.
And that was a single, so you got 1 point.
Yep, first point on the board for any of us.
Need to get a treble there, didn't I?
The good thing about this, even though you're 1-0 down right now, all you got to do is throw a double or a treble, and that's it.
In the lead.
It's all to play for. Right then, Adam, for your third dart. Has he actually hit a treble?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Single 14.
Single 14, which is Arnie movies.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a quote, and you need to tell me which Arnie film it's from. You want to be a farmer? Here's a couple of acres. I'm not going to try and do an accent.
No, do it in the accent. I need to do it in the accent.
You want to be a farmer? Here's a couple of acres.
I didn't know Arnie was Jamaican.
Oh, my mind's gone blank. The sixth day.
Can I guess at Commando?
Last Action Hero.
Oh, of course.
Right, me again, is it?
Yep.
Is this my fourth one?
Third. This is tense. Number 17. The Oscars. How good is that? Which Spielberg movie was nominated for 11 Oscars in 1985, but didn't even win one?
Oh, Christ. I'm going to say E.T. again.
The Colour Purple. Shocking.
Yeah, two questions on Steven Spielberg.
He's screwing me over on purpose, isn't he?
Right then, Adam, your fourth dart.
15.
Kevin James movies. Kevin was selected for the role of Albert by his co-star Will Smith in what film?
Sorry, can I just say who's Kevin James? I'm aware of Paul Blart Mall Cop, but I don't know who Kevin James is.
Same guy.
Who's in the film with Will Smith?
I know the answer to this question as well, depressingly.
The Zookeeper.
It's Hitch, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Hitch.
Go on then, Ben.
I've not watched that film ever.
I would love this to be a game where it's just 1-0. Yeah. When you could have had the opportunity to get like 15 points.
10.
Number 10.
Single 10.
Adam Sandler movies. Who directed Adam Sandler in the movie Happy Gilmore and Big Daddy?
Oh, God alive. Is it... Oh, God. It's like Duggan or something.
Yep. What Duggan? And it's not Hacksaw.
And not Hacksaw Jim.
Half a point for Hacksaw.
You've got to give me Duggan, surely.
No, you don't. No, you're right. Stick two guns in.
Do you want to guess of his first name?
No, all I can think of is Jim Duggan now. I don't know, Neil.
Dennis.
Bastard.
So, Adam. So, number 12.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. So, what was the name of Forrest Gump's shrimp company?
Bubba Gump Shrimp.
He's done it. Oh, 1 point.
The scores are tied.
We might have a game of darts here. Right, Ben, final dart. Fifth and final dart.
Jesus, okay.
I know how much you want the Kevin Smith topic.
Single nine.
Oh, that is Christopher Nolan films. What is the title of Christopher Nolan's first ever full feature film?
Following.
He's got it. 1 point.
Boo!
And Adam, last one.
Got to go for a double.
I really want him to get a single just so you have a game of darts.
13.
Black and white films.
Is it single 13?
Yeah.
So this is to tie it up.
Breakfast at Tiffany's was based on the novel by which famous writer?
I actually have no idea.
I know this.
Go on then.
Truman Capote.
Oh. I'm still going to guess it.
You said I have no idea.
Ben has won.
Let him have another one, because he'll moan otherwise. Yeah. Come on.
No, let him. I want you to play darts. I actually want a game of darts.
It's fine. You can win this way. It's no problem.
Step up, actually. I want a game of darts here. Go on. Step up. That was the answer. Step up.
Step up to the street.
Right then, here we go. 16. Carry On films. This is it. Get out of prison card. The first ever James Bond spoof movie was called Carry On.
Spying?
That's it. He's got it. It's a game of darts. It's a game of darts.
Oh, Jesus.
Right then, three darts. Whoever scores the most. We should have got the guy. What's his name that stands by the board?
Tony.
I wonder what he's up to now. 1. 20. 21. Is it double?
Double top.
61.
61.
I've always wanted to say this. Right, Adam. 61 or more. Take your time, son. Take your time. 1. 20. Oh! Double 1. 23. Ben, congratulations. You're the first ever winner of Raging Bullseye with a score of 61 with three darts. Fair play, mate. That's awesome.
We're professionals.
So how's it feel?
It feels pretty good. I know exactly what Phil the Power Taylor goes through when he wins the World Darts Championship. That's exactly
how I feel.
We're
not quite
at
the Ali Pally yet, but...
Yeah, I mean, I understand the pressures of being up there now. I mean, I've not thrown a dart in 10 years and it was difficult.
So do you want to... Who wants to be the Games Master next week?
I'll do it. I'll be the Games Master,
So, Ben, you could win it all by next week by beating me. And
standard,
I'm not joking.
Standard.
I couldn't throw a fit. I'm that bad at throwing. So stick around for that.
You can't beat a bit of bully. Now, where have you heard that before? You can hear it next week on Raging Bullseye.
Listener questions time. Kevin Holden on Facebook. With the recent casting of Finn Jones as Iron Fist, a typical Asian portrayed character in the Netflix series, is this a case of Marvel so white?
No, because the character is white in the comics.
There you go.
A lot of people are getting up in arms about it, saying this should have been Marvel's opportunity to cast an Asian American in the role because, you know, the character owes a lot to Asian American or Asian culture.
Yeah.
True, fine, but the character is white in the comics, so you can't complain about a white guy being cast as him.
Yeah, also, Marvel Marvel cast as well as they always cast. You know, I mean, Luke Cage.
Yep.
They've not gone and whitewashed that. They've stuck to their guns. Marvel are probably the one company that are just sticking to their guns with what they have. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to cast a black character.
No.
They specifically went with the ultimate version of Nick Fury.
Yeah.
For the reason that he was based on Samuel L. Jackson, and Samuel L. Jackson was interested.
Mm-hmm. And I think if the argument is that there aren't any sort of Asian Americans involved, they cast Elodie Young as Elektra in the new series of Daredevil. That character traditionally is Greek.
Yeah.
And they've cast an Asian American woman as the role. So, you know, the argument doesn't hold water.
Christopher Williams, who would win in a fight? Frances McDormand. Is that right? Is that how you say it?
Frances McDormand is
yep.
Margot from...
Yep.
Not Margot, sorry. Marge from Fargo.
Yep. Or Lily Tomlin.
I have absolutely no idea.
I have no idea.
Whichever one's got the longest nails.
Yeah. I couldn't give a shit either. Why would they be fighting?
This is a great question. Anthony Lusando, do you think Dredd has any chance of getting a sequel? I love Dredd.
I don't think it does. It didn't make any money. It's a great film.
I enjoyed the film. I thought it was really good, and I've spoken to Rich a number of times, a friend of the podcast, about it, and we both think it should have had a sequel. Mm-hmm. I would like to say that the time has passed and it won't now, but we've seen quite a lot recently of them revisiting ideas if it gets enough traction.
Yeah.
So it still could. I think it's unlikely, but it still could.
It's one of those like Hellboy 3 that will only get made if someone with a lot of money behind them swoops in and says, I really believe in this, here's the cash.
Yeah.
Hayley Rushi, you have been kidnapped and the TV characters from the last show that you watched will come and save you. Who's coming to save each of you?
Last TV show I watched was Arrow.
So who's saving
Adam you? And I were watching Arrow before you got around here today, so that's fine if the Green Arrow wants to come and save me.
Weirdly, I watched The Simpsons this morning and it was the Oscars one. I think it was Sky put it on, so it was Ball Hits Man in Groin. So Hans Moleman's come to save me. Well, looking forward to that. New listener, Kieran Leeson. Keep up the great work, guys, but I got a quick question. Nice. What film had the most promise based on the cast, your writer, director, but failed to even come close to what you hoped it would have been?
Interstellar.
I was just about to say Interstellar. Yeah, I think we'll all agree on that.
I would agree. And a film that I haven't yet seen, but apparently is the same thing, is this film that's out now called 999 that stars basically...
Oh, it looks incredible. Yeah, it's got Aaron Paul.
Norman Reedus.
Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson. What's her name? Actress. Brilliant. British. Was nominated for an Oscar yesterday. Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a magnificent
cast.
That's
a hell of a
cast. I know.
Jesus.
And that's only half of it. An amazing cast, but the reviews have been distinctly average.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Paul Buchanan, your favourite ever Stephen King movie? Weird, we were just talking about that. Ever, though?
Green Mile, probably.
Shawshank.
God, that's a tough one to choose out of them two.
I mean, Green Mile or may still be in my top five of all time.
Yeah. Green Mile. Sarah Buddery, what movie is most deserving of the Oscar award for Best Picture but wasn't even nominated, in your opinion?
Sicario.
Sicario.
Hands down.
Was there a film that you saw that you absolutely jizzed over?
Not really one that wasn't nominated. I mean, there was Mad Max that I thought would have been a nice,
yeah,
nice touch to get it.
Mm.
I've still not seen Sicario. I've actually now got it.
Good.
On
Blu-ray. Go home now, watch it. This minute. End the podcast now.
I'll be watching that probably tomorrow now.
Sweet.
So I'll text you both to let you know
what
I thought. It'll probably be that then.
Yeah.
Just edit that in. I'll say it now.
Yeah.
Sicario.
Nice.
I think a close call would have been Straight Out of Compton as well, which I thought was a great film.
Compton's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Jarrett has put, do you think that Quentin Tarantino will ever work with Jim Carrey? Could you imagine that?
See, on one, my instant reaction was to say, of course not, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But then I thought about the fact that in Inglourious Basterds, the character played by Eli Roth was initially offered to Adam Sandler. And it was just scheduling conflicts why he couldn't do it. So if he could work with Sandler, he could work with Carey.
Yeah.
That would be an absolute car crash to watch. But you wouldn't be able to take your eyes off it.
It could
be something absolutely magnificent, because we've seen from Jim Carrey before, he can do very good acting.
Of course,
very good roles. I'd love to see him with some Tarantino dialogue.
Yeah. I'd watch it, that's for sure.
Andy King has put, what's the best trailer you've seen recently that got you the most excited?
The new Dawn of Justice one with the Batman heavy one.
I've not seen that until yesterday, and that was the very first time I'd seen it. And
it was literally the one good thing to come out of that cinema trip for Grimsby.
That was worth the ticket money, yeah.
And there was another film that we saw a trailer for called Money Monster with George Clooney that I'd never heard of. I didn't even know it existed, but that trailer looked interesting. Oh, very good.
It looked like a severely action-orientated, dramatised version of The Big Short.
And I didn't know anything about this film either. And it was literally like, what's the woman's called? Sorry, Julia Roberts
is in it, yeah.
I haven't seen her on screen for years.
You barely see her these days. And the title is shit, Money Monster, but the film looks good.
It just, when it says directed by Jodie Foster, I was like, whoa, this is weird. And she looks great, Julia Roberts, still. She still looks absolutely brilliant. But I really did like the trailer, and I remember hating the fact of Batman vs. Superman because I didn't like Man of Steel. And each week I see a different trailer and it does get better and better. And seeing Ben Affleck yesterday,
I get annoyed when people tell me they didn't like Man of Steel. I actually get annoyed by it.
What are you going to do
It's really bad, isn't it? I find it really annoying.
But I'm convinced.
It's literally the first chapter in a long running thing.
Like, I like it. I like the film.
I don't understand why you'd open a book, read the first chapter and go, nope.
I'll disagree with you on one thing there, because films aren't books. A book, you have all of the chapters in your hand in one go. A film has to stand alone. You can't just say it's the first chapter so it can be incomplete. You've got to wait for the rest. Well, That's not how films work.
You're the guy who watched one Kevin Smith film and thought, I don't like that. Watch them all, Ben.
I wish it were true that I'd only seen one Kevin Smith film. I'd be a much happier man if that was true.
Will you genuinely, if Yoga Hosers gets a... No, listen to this. If Yoga Hosers gets a UK cinema release, I don't think Tuss did, will you, if I buy you...
No, like a week in Leeds, I think.
Oh, okay. If I buy you both a ticket, will you both come with me and just watch it? Just for shits and giggles, please.
Yeah, I will do. That's fine. But obviously yesterday we said we were captive audiences with Grimsby. We had to stay through to the bitter end.
Yeah.
I am not beholden to that for Yoga Hosers. If after 10 minutes I'm furious, I'm leaving.
He's going to leave on the opening credits. There is a good chance that's going to happen.
Well, meet us in the car park. Go and get yourself some food. That's the deal, yeah? And then if it does happen, you guys will come on the podcast and not give a review, but just let them know what you thought.
The thing is, what will happen is Ben will leave after 10 minutes. I'll leave after 20 minutes, and then me and him will sit somewhere in a restaurant or a pub somewhere drinking some delicious Strongbow Dark Fruits.
Big time.
It's been a while, yeah. Dark Fruits would be great right now.
Strongbow Dark Fruit would be lovely right now.
Thank you for the questions, and please keep them coming. The best way to get questions to us is go on skiptotheend.co.uk, because on there there's links for Instagram, which would be pointless. Go on Twitter, go on Facebook, and our email address, and we'll answer every question you send us, and please, please keep them coming.
And that brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. That's four decades of episodes. And I think it's fair to say that it's been an episode of highs and lows.
Yep.
We've given a rewatch the best possible score you can give, 10 out of 10. We've given a new release the worst possible score you can give, the old duck egg, 0 out of 10. Deservedly, it was one of the worst ones I've ever seen.
Awful.
It's done now, though.
Yeah. I don't want to discuss it ever again.
Water under the bridge, it's gone.
Yeah, we literally...
Until the Skippies.
Exactly. We literally won't mention it again to the Skippies, because you just shouldn't have to.
No.
But next time round, we've got some big films. We're going to review Anomalisa, which was an Oscar-nominated film. Very, very interesting. Looks very weird, very kooky, very, very Charlie Kaufman. So I think that's going to be interesting. What year are we skipping back in time to, Adam?
1979.
Mark would actually cry if we did that.
No, it's 1989, of course. We finally hit the 80s.
Indeed we have. And we're going to do our second round of Raging Bullseye. Yep. I have taken an early lead, 1-0 up. Adam is going to be the quiz master.
I'm going to lead it heavily towards Mark.
Jim's don't coming back that. As well.
Jim will be back.
In order to make it 1-1, and then I can beat him.
And then we'll have a freeway of just darts. Three-way darts. That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm.
Mark, what's the next rewatch?
It is Birdemic, shock and terror. And, you know, I'll let you into a little secret here. Just before we started recording this section, I just showed me a little YouTube clip, and both of them are wetting themselves, and I can't believe what we've set ourselves up with here.
Of course, I've seen it before, because I believe it won a lot of awards in the Under the Line category at the Oscars in the UK, all those visual effects.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A bit Lord of the Rings, I think.
Yeah, big time.
But get on it, people.
What is our topic next time, Adam?
We're going to be looking at our top three original songs from films.
We are indeed. So it's going to be a stacked show. Good one, a fun one, I would have thought. So we shall see you then.